guess we're ready to roll. So I'm going to call the Agriculture Committee to order. This meeting will be held in accordance with House Rule 10.01, which is posted online. Mr. Smith, would you please call the roll to establish a quorum?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Sundin is present. Representative Vang?
Present.
Vang present. Anderson?
Anderson present.
Anderson present. Burkle?
Present.
Burkle present. Eklund?
Present.
Eklund present. Hansen R?
Hansen R present.
Hansen R present. Hansen J?
Hansen J present.
Hansen J present. Cleavorn?
Cleavorn present.
Cleavorn present. Lippert?
Lippert present.
Lippert present. Lewick?
Lewick present.
Lewick present. Miller? Not yet. Representative Nelson?
Present.
Nelson present. Thompson? Thompson? All right, we do have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. We have two sets of minutes to approve today. Minutes of the 7th meeting of the Ag Committee were provided with the meeting material and are posted online. Vice Chair Vang, I'm assuming you reviewed the minutes. Can I get a motion?
Yes, I move the adoption of the minutes for the meeting of February 3rd, 2021, and the joint meeting of Ag and Environment Committee of February 5th, 2020.
We'll actually do them one at a time.
Okay. Meeting for February 3rd, 2021.
To the Vang motion, any questions or corrections on those minutes? Hearing none, seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Okay, opposed, same sign. Thank you. The minutes are adopted. The minutes from Friday's joint hearing were also provided. Can I get a motion, Vice Chair Vang?
Yes, to move the adoption of the minutes for the joint meeting of Ag and Environment Committee of February 5th, 2021.
Thank you. Any questions or corrections? Seeing none, hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, same sign. Okay, hearing none, the motion prevails. Both those motions prevail. Just a quick overview. We've got a busy day here with Agri and Virtual Dairy Day. We do have time built in for questions after the testifying, but please be concise with your questions. Please be concise with your answers as time is limited. All the meeting materials provided ahead of the meeting and posted on the committee website. Welcome, Mr. Huguenin, please introduce yourself, begin, and you'll be introducing your testifiers as well. So, Mr. Huguenin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Paul Huguenin. I'm the Director of the Ag Marketing and Development Division at the Department of Agriculture. All of the members have the recently released annual Agri Legislative Report. In it, you will find a lot of detailed information, not just how much was spent on any given program and lists of recipients, but you'll find maps that show the geographic distribution of funds in the recipients. And something new this year I want to call your attention to is that the recipient list will include legislative districts, so you can quickly and easily see who and what types of projects are in your district. Now, rather than take today and try to walk through the entire 45-page report, we thought it would be better to use our time to touch on a couple of key points and then save the majority of the time for you to meet some of the grant recipients so that you can hear their stories firsthand. Next slide, please. This slide shows agri-funding since its inception in 2013. The last two columns on the right show the fiscal year 22-23 base appropriation of $16.93 million. Last week, I shared the governor's rec to increase the bioincentive program by $750,000 per year, as well as to provide a one-time appropriation of $1 million for additional livestock processing grants. And as I mentioned last week, Agri is the tails of the former ethanol producer payments. Just the one thing I wanted to point out is that while Agri has grown over the years it's existed, it's still significantly less per year than what the ethanol producer payments were back in the day. Next slide, please. The current biennium included some one-time only earmarks, and I just wanted to point those out to you because they're pretty substantial and pretty important. They included the Dairy with an Eye program that provided financial assistance to dairy farmers who signed up for the federal DMC program. And you'll hear just a little bit more about that from the perspective of Minnesota Milk, I believe, at the end of the day today. Dairy with an Eye was a one-time appropriation of $5 million from Agri, and our staff also administered an additional $3 million from Deed for a total of $8 million. The second year of the biennium included a $5 million earmark for the Ag Innovation Campus in Crookston. That project is underway and on track. There were also a couple of small one-time only appropriations for Greater Mankato Growth, as well as the Minnesota Turf Seed Council that you see on the screen. Next slide. And this slide just puts all of the fiscal 2021 earmarks on one page, just so that it's easy for you to see those. On the next page, I total those up. So if we could go to the next slide. Adding up all the, all the earmarks on the previous page comes to a total of $9.65 million a year in earmarks, which leaves $4.7 million for the rest of the programs that you see on the bottom half of the slide. Some of those non-earmarked programs are significant major grant programs like the Livestock Investment Grant Program, the Value-Added Grants, and Crop Research Grants. In a normal year, we'd allocate about $8 million for those programs. And I just wanted to call your attention to that because as you look through the annual report, you'll see smaller award totals for some of these programs that you're accustomed to, but that's just a function of those $5 million earmarks. Next slide. I wanted to take just a minute as I close my part of the presentation to discuss, why it's so important for to retain a reasonable amount of unearmarked funding within Agri. The first point is that from the good government best practices lens, some flexibility allows us to fund the best, highest priority projects rather than follow a predetermined allocation. For example, some years we get a ton of really, really good livestock investment grant proposals and maybe not as many great proposals for value added. And this would let us shift. In some years, it's the opposite. The second reason is that it allows us to leverage federal funds if and when they become available. Probably the best example of this is the first biofuels infrastructure program that came out of USDA. We were able to use unearmarked agri funds to secure roughly $8 million of federal funds. The third item is that we were able to use unearmarked agri dollars to respond to the dairy crisis back in fiscal year 19 by creating a new one-time dairy farm improvement grant that helped farmers upgrade from grade B to grade A, or some of those farmers needed to make improvements to maintain their grade A status, and we were able to help them do that. And finally, in the current budget cycle, we were able to use unearmarked agri dollars to respond to COVID much more quickly than if we'd had to wait for the arrival of federal funds. Ultimately, the federal funds came and reimbursed us for nearly all the agri money that we had invested in COVID responses. And the end result is that we were able to respond quickly and still maintain our normal suite of programs. Next slide, please. This is just a look at the specific COVID programs that we were able to launch more quickly because of Agri, or in the case of the Protect Our Milk, Meat, and Poultry Processors program, we were able to include milk processors, even though the federal money only reimbursed us for the meat processor part of that. And there's a detailed section in the report that gives you much more detail about each of those programs as well. And the last thing I want to do is just say that, I want to tell this committee how much we greatly appreciate your willingness to strike a reasonable balance between directing spending through earmarks and providing flexibility for the agency to shift funding among eligible activities as directed in the statute and budget rider. Next slide, please. So I'd like to turn the rest of the presentation over to Ashley Bress, and she has some updates and information, and then she'll be introducing several guests who've been kind enough to join us today to share their experience about participating in agri programs. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Huguenin. Ashley Bress, the floor is yours. Please identify yourself and continue with your testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Ashley Bress. I supervise the grants team in the Ag Marketing and Development Division. Our grant making in fiscal year 2021 is well underway. We have front loaded many of our grant programs to be responsive to community needs, especially in the face of COVID. I'll point out quickly that I expect that our sustainable ag demonstration grant award and denial notification letters should be going out later today, if not today, in the next 48 hours or so. A couple of our grant programs are currently under review. Thus, they include our farm to school grants and our urban agriculture grants that both closed a few weeks ago. We expect to be making awards around early March, maybe late February. But those should be going out soon. And then we're still accepting applications for our county fair grants, our gap cost share, and our new markets cost share, but our county fair grants will be closing on Friday. So we're well on the schedule to get everything awarded here shortly. Can we go on to the next slide? All right. One of the things that we really pride ourselves on is administering our grants as effectively and as efficiently as possible. And that's why since the very beginning of AGRI, we have been committed to using external reviewers. In other places, you might hear these referred to as community-based reviewers. We really mean, you know, the experts in the field. I like to joke, it's not, you know, a bunch of people sitting in offices in St. Paul who are making the award decisions or the recommendations. But we're relying heavily on previous grantees, stakeholders, other industry experts to make the recommendations. For those who are not doing it as part of their work responsibilities, we also offer everybody a modest stipend for doing so. You know, this really ensures that we get reviewers who are committed to the process and are going to do the best job they possibly can. We also do our best to meet or exceed Office of Grants Management guidelines. For that reason, we typically do site visits for projects over $25,000 rather than the encouraged $50,000. So this is a good opportunity for both our grantees and for our staff. You know, our staff get more immersed in a number of different project areas, but it also gives our grantees an opportunity to brag about their projects and interact with the department from a non-regulatory manner. We do most of our projects on a reimbursement basis in accordance with grants management standards. For a few of our grant programs, we do occasionally offer a upfront payment, but by and large, we're doing everything on a reimbursement basis. We also prioritize our underserved communities. How we do that is going to vary significantly based upon the program. If we go back to 2017 and 2018, to the best of my knowledge, we were the first state agency to release an RFP or a request for proposals in a language other than English. We've continued to do that for Good Food Access and for our urban agriculture grants, but we're going to, but we do prioritize our underserved communities throughout our programs. Some of you who were around 2 years ago may also remember that Representative Miller and Representative Hansen encouraged us both to do an outside evaluation of AGRI. You know, now that we've been doing this program for the last 7-8 years, it's reasonable to expect that we will have done an evaluation and that we can confirm that what we're doing is effective and we have good outcomes from it. We did a contract with an outside evaluator this fall. That evaluator is well underway with the evaluation. I was hoping to have results I'd be able to share with you today. We're not quite at that point yet, but I expect that we'll have results here soon. At this point, if we could go on to the next slide, that'd be great. So at this point, I would like to shift gears a little bit and start to talk about some of our specific grants and let you hear from many of our program participants. we're going to do this in kind of a farm to fork perspective, starting with our urban agriculture grants. We've been doing these since 2018. The grants are designed to encourage urban youth ag education and community development in urban and peri-urban areas. And since we've been doing this has been one of our most competitive programs. We have a pretty modest budget of about $280,000 a year, but just this year, those applications that are under review, we've received almost $1.9 million in requests. So those evaluators are going to have a pretty tough job. Awards in this program range from about $1,000 to $50,000. I have two testifiers here. I'm going to start with Evan Flom from Community Action Duluth to talk about the fiscal year 2020 grant that they received for their Seeds of Success program.
Thanks, Ashley. Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Evan Flom, and I am representing Community Action Duluth. Thank you to the committee for the time to speak about our experience with the Agri-Urban Agriculture opportunity. I'm the program manager of Seeds of Success, which is a food access program of Community Action Duluth. Seeds of Success has a number of projects that we work on throughout the year to address issues of food access up in Duluth. The initiatives that we applied the Agri-Urban Agriculture funds to focused specifically on the development of some new infrastructure on one of our sites adjacent to a local high school in West Duluth, as well as some food access opportunities for both low-income community members and children and youth who attend the farmers markets that we manage. Throughout 2020, our program employed, with the support of urban agriculture funding, two part-time crew members who worked on both our growing operations as well as our farmers market initiatives. These two crew members built 10 additional raised beds at our deep winter greenhouse site next to Denfeld High School in West Duluth. And these same crew members also installed and secured some furniture to be used as an outdoor classroom for both the high school and community members in general. Our program hoped to offer classes of the high school some out-of-classroom opportunities in our greenhouse and garden sites this past year, but were unable to due to COVID-19. So our program pivoted from offering these sort of firsthand opportunities to putting more time into developing the outdoor classroom infrastructure, as well as aiding other local schools that currently have farm-to-school gardens on location that were in need of additional supports with the lack of student involvement due to COVID. As I mentioned before, our crew also helped us manage some programs at the local farmers market that we manage. Seeds of Success manages both the Lincoln Park and Hillside farmers markets in Duluth. And both of these markets serve low-income neighborhoods of the city, Lincoln Park specifically being a USDA designated food desert. Our markets match up to $15 to any participants of SNAP who are using their EBT card at market. And we also offer children and youth who are age 17 and younger up to $4 at each market to be spent at the booths of our produce vendors. 2020 was a difficult year for many of us, but our program was able to pivot and find ways to support our community due to opportunities like the Urban Agriculture Program. Our farmers markets actually saw an increase in the number of EBT transactions at the markets this year, and we wouldn't have been able to do all of our programming and run each of these programs without the crew that we had, which that crew was supported by the Urban Agriculture Funds. We've been able to secure additional funding through other opportunities moving forward, but we definitely look forward to applying again for opportunities that the Department of Agriculture offers. So thanks for the time today, and let me know if anybody has any questions.
Thank you. We'll be holding questions till after all the testifiers are through. Ms. Bress, would you care to introduce the next testifier?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Our next testifier is going to be Ebony Coles from Arts Us in St. Paul. They also received a fiscal year 2020 grant to support their youth serving nonprofit in their garden work.
Ebony Coles, please.
Hello, everybody. Thank you guys so much for having me here today. I am very excited to be a part of this. So first, I just want to give you guys a brief overview of who Arts Us is. So the aim for Arts Us is to develop young leaders in and through the arts, culture, and science of the African diaspora. Arts Us is a community-based 501c organization founded in 1992 by a group of African-American artists and multicultural educators. Using the experiences of the African diaspora at its core and collaborating with artists, educators, and communities of other backgrounds and culture, Arts Us offers what we like to call edutainment programs to schools, businesses, and community environments. Our mission is to develop young leaders through the arts, culture, and science of the African diaspora. In addition, Arts Us provides cultural performances, arts and art resources for educators, leadership opportunities for students, and also consulting for community businesses and civic organizations through the lens of the African diaspora. For the record, my name is Ebony Coles, and I am the building and site manager at Arts Us, and I've been there for over 11 years now. And one of the many projects I am responsible for is our community garden. And the garden has been a huge part of our summer programs for many years. And it's in particular in the past 10 years, it has been difficult to manage and maintain the garden. Each year we would try to focus on new aspects of the garden and prepare it for a full revamp that we knew it needed. However, most of the work had to start with preparing the soil. And each year we were just getting stopped in our tracks because we would discover like random things under the ground that we just did not prepare for. Like, for example, there were carpet squares laid out throughout the whole garden about 5 to 6 inches below the ground, and it would tear up machines. And so we had to start the process of digging and turning the soil all by hand, by the hands of our youth, in the summer programs and a very small number of staff and volunteers, which took a lot of summers, many summers, to even complete just the soil, preparing the soil. However, this year was very different. With the COVID-19 pandemic protocols in place, we did have to come up with new ways to prepare the garden in a socially distant way. But with the funding from that was provided by MDA, we were able to get a master gardener to help us with to get things done more efficiently, as well as organize a larger team of over 30 volunteers, staff, and our junior staff. With that, we were able to turn the garden into a work of art. The whole community can admire it. People can hang out there because we built a new patio. Enjoy the harvesting and the, you know, the gathering of the plants that we grow much easier. And regardless that our traditional summer program had been canceled last summer due to the COVID-19, I'm still very proud of the accomplishments that we were able to achieve with the garden. And I'm excited to be able to focus on the future of the garden and the real goal, which was to provide edutainment to our participants and our community, informing them of the steps needed to grow their own and manage a garden year round, as well as focus more on planting types of plants that our African ancestors used in addition to the more familiar plants that we've used in previous years. So with that said, thank you again, MDA, and we could not have done this without you guys.
Hey, thank you. I see we have an Anthony Galloway to chime in on the same issue. Mr. Galloway?
Unfortunately, Mr. Galloway is not able to be here today.
Okay. Moving along then, who do we have next?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So our next testifier is going to be talking to us about both farm business management and our livestock investment grant. Both of these programs have been around Agri for a while, but the farm business management program, it reduces some cost for beginning for farmers to participate in FBM. Our budget this year, about $484,000. This is just a little bit less, you know, than what we normally have. But last year we were able to do about 525 scholarships that offered 50% of the cost. The other program our next testifier is going to be talking about is our livestock investment grant. For those of you who have been around, you would know that the livestock investment grant precedes a grant going back to the late 2000s. This program also has a separate statute that guides it. Our request this year was a little bit lower than what it normally is, but it was about $1.6 million for the $769,000 that we have available. Our awards range between $1,000 and $25,000, and they require a 90% investment by the participant. This program also has a lifetime cap for operation of $50,000. Can we go on to the next slide? All right, so at this point, I would like to introduce you to Erica Sawatsky of Oakdale Farm out in Kensington. Erica and her family own and operate a turkey farm that she can tell you more about. But also, you may remember last week that my colleague Paul Huguenin was talking about Minnesota Ag in the classroom's virtual field trip. Erica and her family was gracious enough to host one of these trips just before Thanksgiving so that students and teachers could go on a virtual field trip of the turkey farm. Wait, wait, wait. So I would like to be able to turn it over to Erica now.
Okay. Can I caution everyone to turn their microphones to mute just to eliminate some of this background interference. So, Erica Sawatsky, please continue. Identify yourself and continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Erica Sawatsky, and I am representing Oakdale Farms today. I am a sixth-generation turkey farm from Kensington, which is about 20 miles west of Alexandria. For more than 50 years, my family has raised turkey breeders, producing eggs that were sold to a hatchery. In January of 2020, we transitioned to raising market turkeys as my husband and I joined the family farm and looked to the future of our business. This required different feed and watering systems, larger feed bins, different lighting in our turkey barns, purchasing a turkey loader, preloaders, and other equipment. That total project for that transition was $66,000. While we were transitioning the operational piece of our farm, we were also working on a transition of ownership in our business as well. As we began to prepare to invest in the transition of our operation, an email from the Department of Ag promoting the livestock investment grant provided us with an option to help lower the burden of our equipment purchases by 10%. After filling out that application and working with the department staff, we were excited to hear that we were selected for the grant. We were prepared to pay the full price of that transition, but that the grant money awarded to us was incredibly helpful and made that decision more palatable and helped my young, you know, farm family make that operational and generational transition. As my husband and I began farming, we knew that we needed farm business management education to help us. We worked with our local farm business management instructor right from the start to learn an incredible amount of detail to help us manage our operation. In working with that instructor and having his support, we were really able to navigate our operations business through the middle of a pandemic and a trade war. And we were lucky enough to benefit from the state of Minnesota's beginning farmer credit for farm business management. For our family, this financial support made the decision to enroll in that program a no-brainer. My husband grew up on a small dairy farm in Wright County in the 80s and 90s. His dad had purchased that farm in the 80s and inevitably lost that farm because of the 80s farm crisis. In 2016, my family asked us if we would join our family farming operation. And, you know, I'll never forget the difference in the reaction between my family and my mother-in-law. I mean, it was a very emotional reaction for her. She can remember the financial and the emotional challenges of farming all too well. But what she didn't realize that things are very different this time. There are pieces of the system that are helping young farmers like us to be able to make it more successfully than our previous generations were able to. The Livestock Improvement Grant and Farm Business Management Young Farmers Grant have both played a small but really critical role in helping my family successfully transition into farm ownership and an operational transition as well. There's many aspects of farming that are very difficult, but we never lose pride in the hard work that we do 365 days a year to feed our nation and the world. We ask that our state continues to support farmers through these programs. Thank you very much for your time, and I'd be willing to answer any questions that you have.
Mr. Chair, you're muted, I believe.
Took my own advice and muted myself. Thank you very much, Erica Sawatsky. Ashley Bress, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if we could go on to the value-added slide, that'd be great. Yeah, so the value-added grant has been around AGRI since the beginning, going back to fiscal year 13. This grant invests in businesses, including meat processors, so they can create upgrade and modernize their businesses and thereby using more Minnesota grown and raised products. We recently completed the evaluation of our fiscal year 2020 grants. This was our most competitive round of grants ever. We received, I think it was 93 applications requesting $5.2 million. Our budget was $1 million. We were able to scrounge up a little bit of extra to bring us up to about $1.3 million, and we're also able to supplement that with a little bit of money from the CARES Act. But still, very, very competitive. Awards in this program typically range from about $1,000 to $150,000. Sometimes we're able to go up to $199,000, depending upon what the budget looks like. And applicants are required to put in a 75% cash match. Can we go to the next slide? With us today, we have Jeff Metz from Metz's Heartland Dairy down near Rushford. We have a few pictures on the slide for you. If you look very closely at these photos, you'll see the Minnesota Grown label that Paul was talking about during last week's hearing. We're so excited to be able to see Jeff using that label. His fiscal year 2020 grant enabled them to move into the gelato business. And if you ever have the opportunity, make sure you try the gelato because it's some of the best you will ever have. So at this point, I would like to turn it over to Jeff.
Jeff Metz, would you please identify yourself and continue with your testimony?
Yeah. Hi, my name's Jeff Metz. I'm located down by Rushford, Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and everybody listening today. We've got a 235 cow operation here, dairy, and I've got four kids involved in the operation. And we started milking cows back in 1983, 2010, as our family was graduating from high school and looking at what they wanted to do. They all decided, a lot of them, that they wanted to be a part of the operation. So we started looking at how we could grow our operation, maybe in a non-traditional way. And that's when we started looking at the value-added side of things. So 2013, we started the construction of our cheese plant at that time. we received our first grant at that time, which was very helpful. It provided our gap financing that we needed to get off the ground and running here, and kind of give the bankers and everything we were working with a little bit of a level of comfort with not only our funds we put into it, but with the Agri grant helping us. We received another one in 2016 to upgrade equipment. And then, as Ashley said, in 2019, we received another one to help us diversify to gelato production. And so today, right now, we are marketing in about over 120 markets in about seven different states here. And as you said, when we do put the Minnesota Grown label on every product to let everybody know that there's some great things made in the dairy side here in Minnesota too. So we also went from an operation that was had about three full-time people, three part-time people on just a farming operation back in 2010 to now we have six full-time people, and we also have another nine part-time people either working on the farm side or in our creamery side of things. So we the value-added grant, it helped us you know, with taking us to another level, but we were able to source out some niche marketing, looking at different things that maybe weren't in the dairy case. So it's really helped us with sourcing the equipment. Stainless, of course, is not cheap, so it's been very valuable to us in getting to the next level. It's never an easy task doing something like this or any endeavor as far as that goes, but the value added grant certainly did help us greatly with everything we're doing now. So it's pretty much in a nutshell what we're doing here. We're making the cheese, gelato, string cheese, bottling honey. And we're always looking at the next project down the road. So I'll be happy to take questions at the end of the session here. Thank you for everybody for listening in.
Thank you, Jeff Metz. Ashley Bress, who's your next testifier?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If we can go on to the next slide, we're going to move into our new markets programs a little bit. You heard my colleague Emily Jervy talk about these quite a bit last Wednesday, so we won't get into too many specifics. But know that this is one of our program areas that really had to make some very substantial shifts during COVID, as it was no longer a viable option to be, you know, bringing companies to face-to-face events. So with us today, we are going to have Casey Kai from K Mama Sauce to talk about how he has used them grant to better market his products.
Casey Kai, please identify yourself and continue with your testimony.
Sure. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, everyone listening in. My name is Casey Kai. I'm the founder and CEO of K Mama Sauce. A recent study finds that 85% of food startups fail within the first 2 years. That number goes up when you're Black, Indigenous, people of color, and an immigrant. It is a gift and a dream to be able to make and sell my mother's Korean hot sauces to the masses as a living. I have been a local church minister, community organizer, and government worker in my past lives, and I now get to bring my love of community service and fundraising together with K Mama Sauce. Again, my name is Casey Kai, and I am a Jersey boy selling Korean hot sauce in the Midwest. That's my tagline. I founded K Mama Sauce as a fundraiser for my local church here in Northeast 6 years ago, and realizing I wanted to make an impact with food. And even before selling one bottle of hot sauce, my senior pastor and I agreed to give 30% of profits to charities as a way to give back directly to our communities, especially those who are most disadvantaged, like communities of color. Having started in our church kitchen in 2015, we sold mostly to farmers markets for many years before we broke through with our first Minnesota retailers like Lunds and Byerly's and local co-ops. Since then, we have been through hills and valleys, receiving nationally recognized awards, selling on the shelves of Walmart, to realizing how underfunded we were to outcompete other condiments with multi-million dollar marketing budgets, and facing bankruptcy multiple times. This is not unfamiliar with running a food business, so our story is not unique. However, we are lucky and blessed to have survived the COVID-19 pandemic and are doing better than we ever have. We are grateful to our loyal customers, the retailers, our suppliers, and especially our K-Mama staff working so hard during these unprecedented times. Much of our early success with giving, much of our early success came with giving out samples in stores, as you may have heard, called demonstrations. Over the course of our 6-year history, we have done over 1,000 demos at local retailers, regional festivals, and national trade shows. Maybe I've seen you there too. The cold truth of a food business is that if people do not try your product, they will more than likely not purchase. In most cases, we not only had to pay our staff, but sometimes the retailers would also make us pay to do demonstrations, ranging from $50 to $300 a demo. Thankfully, Minnesota Department of Ag reimbursed our costs 50% for these demos, alongside other marketing expenses like banners, business cards, and recently online advertising. With the pandemic, it is more important than ever to have an online presence. K-Mama Sauce has been on Amazon since 2016, and we have sold close to 100,000 bottles on that platform. Unfortunately, in order to sell on Amazon, we have to pay for that advertising. They're called keywords. Each word that is searched for has a bid price, which ranges from a penny to a dollar. And our monthly advertising costs add up to thousands of dollars per year. And for a growing small business, that could be money that we use for expansion, paying our staff, and instead we have to use it to stay basically on the platform to be competitive. In other words, if we want to grow, we have to pay for more advertising, or else we start to drop lower and lower in searches and our ranking. We are grateful to do business on Amazon. It's obviously not the only online platform, but it is the biggest. And we're grateful to attract new customers. However, it has started to feel like a necessary evil than success. Thankfully, the cost-sharing program that the Department of Ag affords us covers these costs alongside other advertising fees for Facebook, Instagram, Google, advertising in general online. I know for sure K-Mama Sauce would not be where we are without the help of this important new markets program. We were one of the lucky ones to have gotten traction with demonstrations prior to COVID, and now during COVID are receiving the support for online advertising during an important phase of our business. Thank you.
Thank you, Casey Kai. Ashley Bress. Next.
Mr. Chair, can we please go on to the next slide? All right, the next program we're gonna go over a little bit is our Good Food Access Program. This one has been around since 2018, and like Livestock Investment, it also has a separate statute that guides its implementation. But this program is really designed to increase the availability of and access to affordable and nutritious and culturally appropriate foods in underserved communities. We offer two different types of grants through this program, one for technical assistance to offer that to grocers and other retailers, and then the other is an equipment grant. During fiscal year 2021, we made the decision to only do equipment grants for grocers and other small food retailers because we knew that there was such a need for it. Our request, like all of our programs, extremely exceeded the budget that we had available. We had a request of about $1.7 million for the $280,000 that was available. So you can imagine just how difficult it was to make those decisions. Awards in this program ranged from about $2,500 to $50,000, although I see that we're missing a zero on this slide. So I would like to introduce you to Chris Biesener from Mark's Market up in Hackensack. You can see on the screen how they used their grant to upgrade a freezer that was in desperate need of the upgrade. So I'd like to turn it over to Chris.
Chris Biesener, would you please identify yourself and go ahead with your testimony?
Hi, I am Chris Biesener, a co-owner of Mark's Market in Hackensack, Minnesota. And wow, that's an ugly freezer, right? So that was probably about a 50-year-old freezer that we've been limping along with for a long time. My husband was a meat cutter as a teenager, went to school for it, bought the grocery store when he was just 22 years old. It was just a convenience market at the time. In 97, added it on, made it about 7,000 square foot full service grocery store. And the one thing that we didn't have the money to update at the time was that walk-in freezer. So it got left behind. That was one of the last things left of the old store. The Hackensack community is, it's just over 300 people, but it's lake country. So in the summer, our area swells with all of the weekenders and the snowbirds. But our school district is 50% free and reduced lunch, and we have a lot of senior citizens in our area on fixed incomes. So, you know, we really do make strong efforts to keep our prices affordable. But boy, that freezer was a problem for us. You know, we had to chip off the ice that would form around the door, and we just couldn't have a lot of freezer back stock because of it. So to be able to do this project, we made the difficult decision to sell part of our parking lot to the church next door. That gave us, you know, kind of a 50% match situation. So we asked for 50% of our project cost from the grant to do this, and moved it to the west side of the store, because can't really be without a walk-in freezer either. So hard to add something new when you can't be without it. So we just moved the location of it by the loading dock, and was able to just go from the old to the new. We absolutely would not have been able to complete this project without the grant, so we're very grateful for this program, and know that there are a lot of other grocery stores in the same situation as us around the states, and I know that this is a great program to keep the local grocer alive. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Ashley Bress, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If we can go on to the farm to school slide, that would be great. We have one more testifier for you here today, but I know there's a lot of interest in the farm to school grant. We've been doing farm to school grant making since the beginning of Agri, so I think we're right around our eighth year of it now. But during the 2019 legislative session, you all gave us the authority to begin reimbursing schools for food. Prior to that, we had been focusing on kitchen equipment with the idea that if we invest in the schools to upgrade their equipment and their physical infrastructure, then they can go out and purchase more from local producers. So we kind of took 2020 as a year to get ready for 2021 when we would start doing the reimbursement of food. We were within literally days of launching a request for proposals this summer for the reimbursement pilot. When we, you know, it just became apparent that, you know, that as schools be applying for big, meaningful grants in June, July, August, it wasn't feasible. You know, that was not a good time for our schools to be doing that. So we very, very quickly shifted and put together a rapid response grant. So for those schools that did have the capacity to use local foods during their summer and early fall meal programs, there would be some funding there for them. So we had a really strong response to that program. So we have our testifier today will be able to talk about that a little bit. Then also in, I think it was in August, September, we did finally go ahead and launch our real pilot programs. One being our first BITE mini grant for those schools that have never done farm school before. You know, they can do a pretty simple application and ask for a smaller amount of money. And then we also have our full trade grants for the little schools that do have some experience in farm to school and are ready, you know, to take the next step. Our requests for 2021 are about $408,000. We have a little bit less than $374,000 to award once we factor in those rapid response grants. Those applications are currently under review. So at this point, it'd be great if we could go on to the next slide, and I will introduce Jamie Anderson from Prior Lake Savage Area Schools. Jamie and Prior Lake Savage received one of the rapid response grants, and Jamie will be able to talk about what their experiences have been.
Hey, Jamie Anderson, would you please identify yourself and go ahead with your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Jamie Anderson, and I'm the Assistant Director of Child Nutrition Services for Prior Lake Savage Area Schools. I was invited today to speak to you about our Farm to School program and how the Agri Rapid Response Grant helped us expand our program, specifically in obviously Farm to School within our district. So Prior Lake Savage Area Schools, we have an enrollment of approximately 8,700 students. We serve students pre-K all the way up through 12th grade. Our department, so Child Nutrition Services, our philosophy is focusing on serving students clean label, wholesome foods, and we really strive to serve predominantly homemade and quick scratch menu items as much as we're able to. Farm to school fits really perfectly within our philosophy because by purchasing items from our local growers, we're able to serve our students the highest quality food that is available to us. It's better tasting, having it direct from the field, more nutrient dense. I'm sure we've all tasted the difference between a garden carrot and a grocery store carrot in January. So you just can't beat those sweet carrots right out of the ground. So it was something that was really important to us to continue our farm to school program and grow and expand. It also helps support our local community and economy, which is very important. We are right on the cusp of agricultural communities around us, and to buy food and produce right from our local community members and growers was really important. It allows us to also decrease our environmental food print, so limiting our food miles. Again, we're an East End district, so we really focus on our environmental impact and how what we do affects the environment and growing sustainability and things like that. So kind of the history of our food farm to school program. We started participating in farm to school pretty actively about 5 years ago. We really started small, just procuring local apples from a grower about 10 miles south of us. We then started purchasing the produce from a food hub, the Good Acre, based out of St. Paul. And we wanted to expand our farm to school partnerships and creating more personal relationships with those local growers right in our community. So, you know, it was really important to us that, you know, we're contacting those growers right within our community to limit those food miles and get it as the food as fresh as possible to our students. The Agri Rapid Response Grant was really helpful for us this fall during COVID and trying to pivot so many different times with getting meals to our students was very challenging, and farm to school unfortunately is kind of pushed to the back burner. And so with the release of the Rapid Response Grant, it gave us new life and it encouraged us and allowed us to move farm to school back to our priority list and able to procure some local food items for our students. It felt good and it felt right to be able to serve food that was locally grown to our students again, which was something that is normal in our department. And we were excited just to promote it to our families and our students again. It allowed us to have the opportunity to showcase farm to school with our parents. We operated a in-person dining service when students were in school. We were operating under the hybrid model in the fall. So students, when they were in school, we were able to serve them local produce. And then we also were able to distribute whole produce items as a part of our curbside meal program. So that was really a unique opportunity, kind of a silver lining that COVID provided us. We were handing out full delicata squashes and peppers. And it was just a really a fun different way to showcase farm to school. We were able to create new partnerships with new growers. Waxwing Farm in Webster was a new farmer that we were able to partner with in the fall. They were able to pivot as well and provided us with a lot of different produce items for our school program this year. There's a picture of a student eating one of their locally grown beets. I believe it was one of the golden beets at lunch. And then he's also has a Johnny Pop on his tray. So we also procure value added products as well. So students can see kind of the full rainbow. important part of our program besides just the procurement is the education component. We have posters of all of our growers on our serving lines. We also post them on our digital marketplace sites and media sources, so parents and students can learn a little bit about the growers that they're eating food from. We really appreciate the funding that the Rapid Response Grant provided, and we look forward to continuing and expanding our farm-to-school mission through additional agri-funding opportunities. I'll be happy to answer any questions at the conclusion of the presentation.
Thank you, Jamie Anderson. To Mr. Huguenin or Ashley Bress, is there any further testifiers, or do you want to wrap things up before we go to questions?
Mr. Chair, members, we have concluded our presentation, and I know between our testifiers and Ashley and I, we'd be more than happy to do our best to answer questions if there are any.
Well, thank you so much. We've got about 10 minutes or so for questions, and I just have to relate to the committee that the reason I accepted the chairmanship of the Ag Committee is because of the food samples that we typically get during committee, and I certainly do miss that. So I'm going to check online to see if I can buy some cheese or some K-Mama sauce. Looking forward to trying both of those. You have piqued my interest. That said, any questions from the committee, please? Representative Lippert has his hand up first. Representative Lippert, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is a question for Ms. Anderson, if she's still available.
Jamie Anderson?
Yes.
So it was, I just really enjoyed hearing about all that Prior Lake schools are doing, have done with farm to school in such a short amount of time, and the ways you're able to be nimble in the midst of COVID, which has kind of been the rule for schools across the board. I'm curious if you can talk a little bit more about what you'd like to see happening with farm to school in your district going forward. Like, what do you think are some next steps? What are some possibilities?
Yes.
Anderson, please.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and Representative Lippert. I think that the next steps for us is expanding and trying to create those personal partnerships with the farmers that within our community. The food hubs are an amazing resource for both schools and growers to get, we need large volumes of food at times. So having like a food hub to purchase directly from is great. But I really, when we have growers that are 10 to 20 miles away from our schools, I would love to have relationships directly with them and have infrastructure in place where they could, deliver their produce, whether it's, 500 pounds potatoes or it's only 50, and allowing us to utilize that and serve it in whatever capacity that we're able to. So really creating those one-on-one partnerships with our farmers. And then, as I kind of alluded to, the education component, we're working schools, and so having the farmers come in and speak directly with our students, that would be something that would be kind of a next step for us. I think it's kids are not really knowing exactly where their food comes from. And so to educate them on that, I think is really important.
Representative Lippert, any follow-up on that?
That's helpful, Ms. Anderson. That's all, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Anderson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question has to do with the meat processor grants. The department talked about disbursing about $1 million this past year. And of course, when the pandemic hit last spring and the major packers shut down, meat processing was a really high impact area, and we really tried to help them as much as we could. And you say you had about $5 million in requests. You gave out about $1 million or $1.3 million. I'm just curious how many COVID dollars the department had access to, and was there any thought to putting more money into that program since the need was so great during the pandemic this past year?
Mr. Huguenin, would you like to take that one?
Sure, I'll start and perhaps Ashley can jump in. So we had access specifically through through the CARES Act for $100,000 that was dedicated towards livestock processing. And so we used all of that. And then through the regular value-added grant, we certainly, as always, prioritized meat processing facilities in that. And I know Ashley can give you a little more of the specifics about that. Or at least I think she might be able to. And if not, we can, I know we can do that right after the hearing and get that to you. But so we used as much of the CARES Act money as was allowable for livestock and meat processing to do that. The one thing that kept us from using even more for that. So in other words, some of what we spent out of Agri, we couldn't reimburse from CARES Act, but that was due to the CARES Act deadline where they required these meat processing equipment to be installed and usable by the end of December. And in some of our value added projects, they simply couldn't hit that deadline. But we used absolutely as much as we could, as much as our processors could implement in the accordance with federal regulations. Okay. Hopefully that helps. And I don't know if I missed anything, Ashley.
Representative Anderson, anything further?
I have time for one more question, Mr. Chair. I can
absolutely. Okay,
this has to do with the urban agriculture grants, and I fully support them. I toured some of the sites years back with Representative Hamilton, and this really was a project brought forward by Representative Karen Clark, just an excellent project. But as I recall back then, it seemed like the grants for urban ag was a direct appropriation out of the general fund, and now we are taking it out of Agri. Has that been the case, or is this just another expansion of project coming out of the Agri fund?
Paul Eugen, please.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, it's a good question. My recollection is that even in the first year of the urban ag grants, it came from Agri. If I remember right, there was legislation that I think Representative Hamilton and Representative Clark carried that moved separate. And then I think when they actually put together the actual bill, I think the way that they could fund it was to put that in Agri. So that's my understanding, is that I think it's always come out of Agri, even though it started as a request for a separate appropriation.
Okay. Ashley Bress, do you have something to add?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson. I will just echo what Paul had already said. In that first year, I believe the amount was up to $250,000 out of Agri. And then for this biennium, it went up to $300,000. But it has always been a part of the Agri program.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Anderson, anything further?
Well, if you'd permit me, Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask Mr. Metz, I hope your cattle waterers are all running and with the cold weather we're having. But just if you could take just a couple of seconds and develop, tell me how you could develop. You have a 7-state market. That's excellent. How do you develop markets in such a big area as that for your cheeses and your other products?
Okay. Jeff Metz, please.
Yeah. Mr. Anderson, thank you, Mr. Chair. A lot of it's luck, and yeah, I'll be honest with you, it's just meeting the right people at the right time. You know, we were able to get into a grocery chain, and that took us into those states. Otherwise, primarily, we've been marketing in southeast Minnesota up into the Twin Cities, doing anywhere from, actually, as I mentioned, schools. We do local grocers, grocery chain, meat markets, anybody, wineries that's willing to sell our cheese is how we've been doing it. And so it's just a lot of knocking on doors, just looking at going from community to community, looking at what opportunities there are. That's how we built it up over the last 7 years. So, yeah.
Okay. Representative Anderson, anything further?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much. That about concludes this portion of the committee work today. So I'd like to thank the department and all the testifiers. It's been very enlightening. Next up, we have the dairy presentation from Shelley DePestel and Christine Ryan and Kate Spadjensky. Shelley DePestel, please.
Thank you, Chairman Sandeep. We appreciate you allowing us to testify before the committee today. My name is Shelley DePestel. And with us, we have members of the Spanjensky family, our 2020 Milk Producers of the Year. For our new committee members, I want to mention that with us today in terms of testimony are two sister dairy farmers, board of directors, in completing our work. If you haven't seen them already, you will soon. First, I want to mention Lucas Shostrom is our executive director. He lives on a dairy farm near Bruton in Representative Paul Anderson's district. The second name I want to mention is our lobbyist, Darren McBeth, who represents us and several other agriculture clients. I grew up on a dairy farm and returned to the farm 23 years ago and have served on the Minnesota Milk Board since 2010. Last December, my fellow board members elected me as their board president. Continue working for all the dairy farmers. Leave our work shows that is who we always have in mind. We really appreciate the partnership with members of this committee, find solutions and create opportunities for today's dairy farms. Last spring was a roller coaster, unprecedented and unexpected. However, due to the risk management programs Minnesota supported, our work partnering with federal officials on finding solutions during the spring portion of low prices and recovering markets later in the year, it turned out to be one of the best financial years ever for most Minnesota dairy farmers after the very tough years of 2015. This time last year, we were hopeful for what the markets would bring us in 2020. And with you had convinced the largest portion of Minnesota dairy farmers ever to manage their milk revenue risk through available programs. Around 90% of Minnesota milk production was insured in some way, we estimate. That was because of an opportunity in 2019 when dairy farmers were really suffering. If they were not being hit only by a combination of terrible low milk and beef prices, making some dairy farmers that wanted to sell out and quit able to because of their cows were worth so little, they were also seeing their barns and other agricultural buildings collapse due to heavy snow loads. While this affected dozens of dairy and others, it was clear our industry needed both a financial and mental shot in the arm to support from our state. Members of the previous version of this opportunity before them, bill passed with risk management program that provided a discount if you signed up for all 5 years. We at Minnesota Milk have always stressed that our dairy farms manage their risk. But as of 2019, for the first time, dairy farmers could affordably manage their risk with a handful of different options, at least one of which should work for every size dairy. If we could go to the first slide, Nancy. Okay, let's go to the second slide. To incentivize this, we partnered with you and our friends at the USDA Farm Service Agency for the Dairy Assistant Investment and Relief Initiative, administered wonderfully and quickly through the Department of Agriculture. The state of Minnesota invested $8 million for a rebate program if dairy farmers put their own money in terms of a five-year commitment to the new Federal Revenue Insurance Program for milk. And thanks to your investment, they did. And they did it at about a 25% higher rate than average, including the next highest major dairy state of Wisconsin. Our state's $8 million rebate program compelled farmers to invest their own $38 million over a five-year enrollment. What does this mean? We are through just 2 years of the 20. Already, over $55 million in insurance payments has returned to Minnesota and $11 million more than if the state had signed up at the average rate. So the program has paid for itself already, and there are nearly three full years remaining in this risk management program. So a big thank you to you, this committee, the entire House, the Senate, and the governor for helping us to pass dairy in 2019. It's still paying dividends. Thank you. And the next slide. It's for 2021. Number one is to expand the beginning farmer tax credit to immediate family members. We are working with the revisor's office to expand this current tax credit to immediate family members. This is a relatively new program that was a good pilot, but it is clear the allocated funding can handle an expansion beyond unrelated parties to immediate family members. It helps provide a 5% benefit to landowners while the new and beginning farmer pays 95% of the cost. Number two, border-to-border broadband internet. And five, milk their cows with automated milk systems or robots. Other roughly 300 Minnesota dairy farms utilize automated sensors to monitor their cows' activity and ruminations. That would be chewing their cud in about 8-minute increments. Activity and rumination help dairy farmers determine where animals are in their reproductive cycle and can help find sick animals even before the best farmers know they're sick. Long before the pandemic, every dairy farmers in Minnesota Milk have hoped for better internet speeds, which will help level the playing field for all types of dairies. Now, with the needs of rural schools and hospitals through distance learning and distance care, we should make an investment in a broadband internet. That is why we joined the Minnesota Rural Broadband Coalition at the end of last year. Number three, environmental clarity. Finally, we support a bill just introduced in the Senate to eliminate unproven agronomic requirements for livestock farmers. The thing about livestock farmers is we live where our animals live, we drink their water, breathe the air. We want what is best for our soil, and we do our best to apply our valuable nutrients when it is best for our land and water. In some years, winter begins in October and ends in January. In others, it doesn't begin until December, and it might last until April or May. But in between, there can be days that are perfect for applying manure for both the soil and the water. Considering how wide the difference in conditions are between where I live in Winona County and where Representative Bertha lives in Roseau County can be on any given day, it doesn't make sense for us to have a blanket policy to say what should or shouldn't be done across the state on any given day, much less a whole month. We are working on a House author for this bill and would be happy to work with you to make these regulations work better for Minnesota farmers. And B, we are supportive of efforts and even easier for farmers to adapt these practices with forthcoming legislation. And if we can go to our last slide. I am going to stop here and turn it over to two family members of the Spanjenski Dairy of Monaga, our Minnesota Milk Producers of the Year, brother and sister Ryan and Kate Spanjenski. I had the pleasure of serving on the Minnesota Milk Board for a number of years with their mother, Christine, and we will also share the video we produced in making this award. I think you'll find a great example of Minnesota dairy farming. And of course, we are open to your questions. I'll turn it over to Kate and Ryan.
Thank you, Shelley DePestola. There seems to be a little bit of a technical difficulty with your testimony. It was breaking up from time to time. I'm just wondering if we could have that delivered, your comments delivered to us electronically for the committee, so we get the full impression of what you chose to testify to today. So, on with the Spajewski family, Minnesota Milk Producers of the Year. We're going to hear from Ryan and or Kate and Christine, please.
Yeah, thank you very much, Commissioner Sundin, and also the members of the committee. We certainly appreciate the opportunity to be here today. So I am Christine Spajewski from Spajewski Dairy, and we're located about 200 miles northwest of St. Paul. We are a first-generation dairy farm. My husband, Mark, and I farm in a partnership with Mark's twin brother, Mike. We started farming on April 1st, 1994, in what was very humble beginnings. We started out with 60 cows in a rented barn with one tractor, and the three of us actually lived together in a mobile home together. That was what needed to happen in order for us to get started. In those almost 27 years, we have grown our dairy to currently milking 350 cows. We farm about 1,500 acres, 400 of which is corn that we raise for silage, and 1,000 acres that we produce in hay, both dry hay and wet hay, that we feed to our animals. We also raise our own replacement heifers. At Spajewski Dairy, we currently have four full-time employees that are a huge value to our business and to the everyday life of what we do here. Mark and I have four children, Ryan, Kate, Adam is 17, and Seth is 15. And my brother-in-law, Mike, has one son, John, who is 10 years old. And at this time, I'll turn it over to Kate.
Hi, my name is Kate Sajensky. I'm the second oldest. I actually just graduated from Ridgewater College with my 2-year degree in agribusiness. With Ridgewater College, I actually had the opportunity to take internships off farm, and that's actually where I'm located now. I work at 2 farms that are off farm, one which is Minnesota's first A2A2 creamery called Ten Fins Creamery. And I also work at Hendricks Brothers Dairy, which is another really good family friends of ours that I have worked at since I was about 12 years old.
And hello, I am Ryan Spajinski. I graduated from Ridgewater College in 2017. I got a degree in dairy management there. While I was there, I had the opportunity to work at a farm down there, Deerview Dairy. I learned a lot of different things about how different farms can do things different, and ended up coming back to the home farm after I graduated. And as a full-time employee, I kind of took over dad's role in milking cows every morning, and I've been here ever since. I work full-time just about every day.
Okay, and obviously, you know, when we, you know, talk about the farmer investment grants and, you know, how important that is, you know, to the younger generation that's coming up to the dairy farm, you know, it's the dairy industry is a tough industry to get into. It was when Mark and I got into it 27 years ago, and it really honestly is no different today. If anything, maybe even more so, you know, because of the capital that it requires to, you know, start a dairy on your own, but also to come into the family farm. So these grants are very, very important. They're very important to the industry. If we want Minnesota's dairy industry to continue to grow, and we want our younger generation to be able to come back to the farms or to start their own farms, these grants need to be available. And we sincerely appreciate, you know, the department having those grants available, and we ask for continued support. I will say that here at Spajinski Dairy, we're very humbled, you know, to have been chosen the Minnesota Milk Producers of the Year. We're very honored to be a part of Minnesota's dairy industry. We get to work side by side with a lot of great farmers all over the state. And though we have a multitude of diversity, our goals are all the same, which is to take care of our animals, to take care of the land, and to produce a wholesome product that not just my family can enjoy, but other families can enjoy as well. And so we sincerely appreciate the honor.
Okay, that's terrific. Congratulations. Hope you enjoy your notoriety for the next year as you are reigning champs in Minnesota. I really do have to comment on the educational component that you both took advantage of. That's absolutely terrific. We have time for a few questions. I see Representative Chair Hansen has got his hand up. Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the Spajinski family. Congratulations on the award. My question is a little different, but you mentioned that you had 1,000 acres in hay or in alfalfa, and that seems to be getting rarer in terms of having high quality forage. And we hear a lot, you know, here at the Capitol about cover crops and trying to have cover crops. And it seems to me the simplest, easiest thing we could do would be to have alfalfa or forage as a program crop, just like corn or soybeans at the federal level. And so my question's on the availability of hay, the availability of high quality forage. How are you compared to other dairy farmers in terms of growing your own or just the overall hay market, and what your thoughts are on, because it seems to me we have less hay out there. We have less hay being grown and a lot more corn. So I'd like your perspectives and what you think about that in terms of both as a crop, but your availability and the quality of hay that you're seeing.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So
Christine Spajinski, please.
Sure. I would say, you know, here at Spajinski Dairy, we are actually helping in the area of getting a good quality hay out there. The 1,000 acres that we farm in hay is not completely utilized by our animals on the farm. We do sell a lot of hay off the farm. Our hay ground consists of anything from grass to grass alfalfa mix to straight alfalfa high quality dairy feed. As I said, we both bale dry hay, and we also bale it as a wet bale, or what's considered a baleage to feed to the animals. So both, basically, we do sell a lot of dry hay off from our farm. But absolutely, you know, when it comes to good quality, you know, dairy quality alfalfa, it really, it's all about weather. Winters are very, very hard on our crops. And of course, summertime, if you don't get the timely rains like you're supposed to, then it is also very, very hard to get a good crop. Here at the farm, I will say we are also dabbling in cover crops. It's something we started probably about 3 years ago. Has been a little bit of a challenge for us because our growing season is much shorter up here. It's always pretty amazing, the diversity of the growing season between northern Minnesota and southern Minnesota. For us, we have a little bit of challenge in the fall, you know, trying to get corn off the field and then being able to come back in with a cover crop. But we also do a lot of no-till drilling in our hay ground, just so that we can lengthen the growth cycle of that hay.
Thank you. We have next up, Representative Lippert, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and my congrats too to the Spodzinski family for your award and the success of your business too. I'm curious, your farm is about 350 head, it sounds like, and that, as I've talked with other dairy farmers, it sounds like that can be, the mid-sized farm can be kind of a difficult place to be for some as far as competitiveness, and I've heard some farmers, you know, frustrated with competing with the really large farms and the efficiencies that they can take advantage of. So I'm just wondering, you know, what being in that mid-size range is like for you, you know, what's working for you, what's difficult for you?
Christine Spodzinski, please.
Yes. So actually, you know, we find here on our farm that actually 350 cows works really well for us. And, you know, that's a big part of Minnesota's industry. There is so much diversity, and what might work for one farm doesn't necessarily work for another. We've been fortunate here. You know, as I said, we have four full-time employees. We've been fortunate to have a very strong, efficient workforce for us. We don't have a big turnover in labor. All of our employees have been here for several years. And so, you know, 350 cows allows us to be able to provide an income for six families, and at the same time allow us to have a little bit of freedom to get off the farm when we would like to. When we were first starting out and we had less cows, less employees, you know, it was much more difficult for us to be able to get off the farm, for us to be able to have that family time, for us to be able to, you know, go to our kids' events. So this has really helped for us. And I'll be honest and say that 350 cows was never our goal. We have just really grown internally. And there are some days we think we're plenty big enough and would actually even like to get rid of some cows and maybe shrink down a little bit. But it works for us. We have been blessed in our business, in the decisions that we have made. As we have gone along, that has just allowed for good fiscal responsibility on the dairy, and we are proud of that.
Thank you. Any follow-up on that, Representative Lippert?
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Christine. It's just helpful to hear you talk through those dynamics on your farm, and again, I congratulate you and your family.
Thank you.
Okay, I'd like to thank all the presenters and testifiers for the work today. It's been a very enlightening session here. We have no further questions, so again, thank you very much, and we're adjourned. The next meeting is Wednesday, February 10th, 1 o'clock. Thank you very much.